Today's program is brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to another week with The Main Course without Patrick Martins. I'm Alexis McLaughlin, here with my tried and true co-host, Philip Gilmore.
On hiatus for the last couple weeks.
You were just talking shit about Tallahassee. I can't believe that. That was so rude.
I am from Florida, so I am allowed to shame that wicked, disgusting little town.
I spent 8 to 10 years in that lovely town.
I spent 8 to 10 years
really
in
sure
Rikers.
How
dare you shame that wonderful prison?
Tallahassee is not that bad. Jacksonville, on the other hand,
I'll give you that.
So in studio today we have.
Have you ever been to Rome, Italy?
No, I haven't.
Okay, well,
is that a shitty place too? Do you want to shit all over Rome?
No, I'm just saying Tallahassee's not that great. Yeah,
I'm missing the connection.
Okay.
In studio today, very excited to have Greg Vetter, who is CEO and founder of Tessie Mae's All Natural.
Pumped to be here.
Who himself doesn't like Jacksonville, so we all have a city in Florida that we dislike.
A bad strip mall experience.
That's basically going to Florida is a bad strip mall experience.
Yes.
So I guess we got started talking about going to Florida because, Phil, you are leaving tomorrow night. You're going, you're road tripping because you're refused to fly.
No, I didn't refuse to fly. I just, I like, there's a thing when I go back to Florida, obviously I'm super busy in New York, so I'm basically working until 5 minutes before I leave to the airport, and then I go straight from work, fly, and then 3 hours later I'm in like family mode, you know, back in South Florida, my home, so it's kind of like, you know.
Oh, so it's like concerning. The reset time.
Yeah, so I like taking trains or driving or, you know, to kind of ease into it, you know, like a little vacation before the vacation.
I get it.
Yeah.
That actually sounds really reasonable and kind of pleasant.
Yeah.
So, I want to join you.
Yeah, we have an extra seat in the rental car. Yeah, so I'm going down to Miami. I'm going to do a pop-up for Momo Sushi Shack at the Mondrian Hotel.
That's pretty, that's you know, legitimately fancy.
It's fancy. It's kind of intimidating because, you know, I kind of live my life like a pirate and I have my little ghetto sushi shack and then I'm in this, like, you know, 5-star, you know, international hotel thing.
Yeah. We're very fancy pants.
Yeah, fancy pants. I actually bought some fancy pants.
Just for the trip?
No, I actually didn't.
No, I wouldn't expect so.
I'm gonna wear basketball shorts all the time.
And cat shirts.
Yeah.
Greggy, Phil's got a place on the corner, Momo Sushi Shack, which is amazing. It's delicious. You know, in Bushwick, it's kind of like this. It is like a, you know, garage sale sushi joint, whatever you want to describe it as.
Yeah.
But how do you get like an invite to Mondrian? You just, you know, someone eats at your place?
Or
you just...
Yeah, basically. You know, they were looking, I think, you know, with the, Miami had the big resurgence, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I think there was this kind of dip about 10 years ago or 12 years ago where it wasn't, like, cool. It was still cool, but it was a little bit, you know, douchey. And I think the whole Art Basel, Art Basel Miami thing really kind of, like, reignited the flame down there. And so there's this really big connection with the art world. And then, obviously, there's always been a connection between, New York and Miami. But now I think it's, like, they kind of went, like, you know, the grimy cool kids down there from
Instead
Brooklyn.
Instead of being the old Jew connection.
Yeah, exactly. So
Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, so they're trying to like, you know, they're just kind of trying to like, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know, do something a little bit different that, you know, because the same thing doesn't work over and over and over again in an environment that changes. So I think they're just trying to like
that's
do new
the
things.
Definition of insanity.
Yeah, exactly.
Trying the same thing over and over again, yeah, expecting exactly. different results.
Yeah, McDonald's.
Who are closing a ton of shops or closing stores. It's like for the first time they're shrinking.
What is?
McDonald's.
Oh, really?
For the first time in like 50 years, they're shrinking their presence. They're closing a significant number of stores.
Hmm.
Also coming out with like salads and other alternatives where it's like at that point, you know, just do what you do best,
which is a
really, you know, disgusting dollar burger that maybe I want when I'm drunk.
Mm. Do you guys know the term jumping the shark?
Yeah, Fonzie.
Yeah. Do you know about this?
No.
It's a term that was for TV shows, but now it applies to everything. It's there was, you know, Happy Days was like the number one show for like 10 years. And there was this episode where Fonzie jumped over some buses. And then, you know, it was the most watched TV show of all time because he jumps over the buses on his motorcycle and he crashes.
Like, yeah. Not like physically, like long jump.
No,
like,
yeah. On his motorcycle. On his motorcycle. Like, he jumps over the motorcycle. And then it was like the season
Evel
finale. You don't
style.
Know if he died. And then, like, 5 years later, it was, like, the least watched show. So they tried to redo the episode to get people interested in Happy Days. And they literally had Fonzie on water skis jumping over sharks. And then it's like, and then, like, what? And, you know, it freezes in midair and, like, you know, like, nobody cared. So that's, like, when a TV show kind of does everything it can do and then it's dying. And then they try this one last thing. They call it jumping the shark.
The act of desperation. Yeah.
So I think McDonald's serving, like, healthy vegan and, you know, salad options is jumping the shark for restaurants, maybe.
I'm with you on that.
Well, I see that. So, you know, Greg, what's going on? Thanks for traveling up to see us, because you're not even Brooklyn local, so we're doubly excited that you would even consider coming here and hanging out with us.
Annapolis, Maryland.
Yeah. So, is that where you're from?
Yeah, grew up there.
Lacrosse country, I hear?
It is lacrosse country. Yep.
Yeah.
I remember actually playing baseball and sitting in the outfield getting stung by bees. And these kids were running up and down a field beating each other with metal poles.
Yeah.
And so after the baseball game, I went to my dad. I'm like, hey, are they allowed to do that? And he's like, yeah, they are. I'm like, I think I'm going with this.
Yeah.
So that started it.
Yeah.
A couple bee stings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Run any kid off the court. What were you going to say?
Oh, yeah. It's neat. Lacrosse is super popular in that area of the world, right?
Yeah, and it's growing.
Yeah.
So it's we've always coached youth teams, and my brothers and I played in college and then played professionally. So
wow. Where did you play in college?
I went to Washington College
wow,
in
awesome.
Chestertown, Maryland, and both my brothers played at Towson.
Oh, cool. Awesome. Yeah.
It's definitely, it's one of those sports that for so long was completely isolated to New England. Because Phil and I both played. Phil, how did you play? You're from Florida, too.
Well, the school I went to I was telling him the school I went to had a, whatchamacallit, our history teacher was actually used to be the number one lacrosse player in the world.
Oh, that's yeah, what that story
him,
was.
Him and his brother were the number one and number two players in college and then afterwards, and they were the first lacrosse players on the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
But back then, there was only, I think, 11 schools in all of Florida that played lacrosse. So.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah.
I had kind of a similar story, too, because I was, in New York in middle school when I lived up here, you know, I had exposure to lacrosse and played with my friends all the time. And then I moved down to Florida and no one knew what it was. Hmm. But this really rad guy, Jay Black, came to our school and like started a club team, and he had like
in
his
Naples?
Children.
Naples?
Yeah, in Naples. And his children were like toddler size. I have no idea like why he did this like without pay. He just loved the sport that much.
I love the little lacrosse sticks for like 4 year olds.
Yeah,
so
the
cute.
Little mini when they just like start
yeah.
beating each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was it, and we got a team.
Have you ever seen? This is totally off topic, but have you ever seen the Facebook photo for Momo Sushi Shack?
Have I ever? I mean, yeah. I think it changes. You don't have Facebook work?
Well, no. On like our second anniversary for the restaurant, I took everybody to New Jersey to go skeet shooting, and one of our friends came with us. Her name's Maiko, and she's literally a Japanese girl. And she's 4'8", and she's like literally this tall. And so they actually had a gun for her, and so there's this picture on our Facebook page of Maiko shooting a gun, but it looks like a real shotgun. It looks like, you know, she might be like 5'5" because of, you know.
They make
guns for children. Yeah, it's like this little gun. Like, I held it, and I don't think I could even fit my finger in the hole, you know? But, yeah.
That's adorable. Like, a little kid bowling ball.
Oh, yeah.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Yeah. Amazing stuff. So, Greg, you and your brothers, you guys have this interesting story, like, you know, really wholesome story. Lacrosse background, then, you know, I guess after college, after hanging out, you guys started a company together.
Yep.
It's so wholesome. There was no fighting or drinking or drugs or sex. It was all wholesome the whole time. Yeah.
When the company started.
Yeah,
before
exactly.
Before that, I can't guarantee it.
Well, see, here's the thing. Once you become a salad dressing mogul, yeah. I mean, you know, the money, the drugs, the booze, everything is just on your doorstep. Oh,
it's like Huckleberry totally. Finn meets Annie's. Right. Organic.
Right.
Give me more of that lemon garlic. Yeah.
That's why we started it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we grew up just watching videos of salad dressing moguls killing it on MTV. We're nice. Like, this is what we're going to do.
Wow. I want one of those chains. I want one of those cars.
Yeah.
Growing up, my mom had to figure out how to get us to eat our vegetables. Mm-hmm. And
were you guys really that bad?
Yeah.
Like worse than normal kids? All kids don't want to eat their
vegetables. I wouldn't say worse than normal kids, but I would just say us as three boys running free and just terrorizing our community.
Yeah.
We needed to, you have to eat.
Yeah.
And so we weren't eating what my mom was putting on the table. So she came up with this lemon garlic dressing and we crushed the entire salad that night.
Yeah.
And so from that point forward, every single night we ate lemon garlic salad dressing on romaine lettuce.
Wow.
And it was the topic of conversation. So it was like, hey, did your kids, you know, kill any squirrels today or shoot things with slingshots or beat up anybody? Mm-hmm. How's the dressing? And we're like, oh, you know what? Add a little bit more salt next time. And so that was the topic every single night. And
I like that you're brought into the conversation.
You're right.
Did you cook at all, or did you have an exposure to? Because I grew up cooking with my parents, my grandparents, so that's where I learned how to be in a kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, my mom made dinner every night. My dad made breakfast on the weekends, so we were always, you know, making pancakes or making dinner, or on holidays you're baking cookies or doing anything. So we're always in there. And so they're just like, do you like it? And we're like, hey, you know, did you switch the lemons up this time? They're like, oh, yeah, we did.
Yeah.
You know, if you can imagine three kids in
eating something
school.
1,000 times. Right.
And
that's a test lab. Your mom ran a little test lab. She's a genius.
I know. She is a genius.
Yeah.
And so then got a job after college and came home for lunch one day from work, and this 2-liter bottle of salad dressing was missing from my refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
So I called a bunch of my neighbors and finally got to a kid that never ate salad ever. And I'm like, hey man, random question. Did you take my salad dressing?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, yep. Woke up this morning, was jonesing for it, hopped on the scooter, knew the code to your house, went in, took it, and I'm over at my house crushing salad. And I'm like, okay, can you bring it back? And so I hang up the phone and I think to myself, what kind of man breaks into another man's home and steals his salad dressing?
This is not in any way an invitation. It's not like your mother said, like, oh, yeah, sure. Like, why don't you take this? Like, he went in.
He needed it. He needed it.
That's a ballsy move.
So then I called my mom and I'm like, hey, you're not going to believe this, but so-and-so stole the salad dressing from my house. And she's like, oh, that's typical.
Mm.
And I'm like, I'm going to get us into Whole Foods.
Yeah.
And if I get us into Whole Foods, will you go into business with me? She was like, that's never going to happen. I said, that's not what I asked you. And so then I just started cold calling the local Annapolis Whole Foods. and the stars aligned, and they were about to open the new Annapolis Whole Foods, which was like May 1st, 2009. And I told them I was a food manufacturer, and
that's where the lies start.
Hey, I'm not committing to any lies here.
You can pad the truth. But the salad dressing actually took 12 years to develop in our food lab.
It's been meticulously tested. They're like, where's
your food manufacturing facility? I'm like, yeah, it's in Eastport. They're like, where? I'm like, anyway, try the lemon. And so, you know, everybody tried it. They're like, wow, this is amazing. Now, here, fill out this, you know, 200-page packet on being a food manufacturer. And I'm like, okay, Google, how to be a food manufacturer.
We're gonna buy the dressing. We're just going to need that that FDA approval stamp. Get that over to us tomorrow. And we'll go, oh, okay.
They're like, HACCP plan. Please send over your HACCP plan. I'm like, what is a HACCP plan?
Oh.
Wow.
And so, but we ended up legitimizing ourselves over the course of a couple months, and we got in for the grand opening, and we ended up setting a national sales record for Whole Foods. We sold 55 cases of lemon garlic dressing in one store in 5 days.
Wow.
And so I thought that was the norm. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is great.
Man, we got to really step up production because, I didn't realize how fast things sell when you start selling them.
I can't
them.
Believe people love salad dressing this much. We never bought any.
I mean, going into the start of this, was there any control or any influence in the marketing of the product in the store? Because I mean, there's so much influence in displays and where something's put. Was it just on the shelf next to everything else? Was it because it was a homegrown product
and
had like an end? Okay, so you were present too.
Yeah. Yep, I was telling the story. I was pouring it on lettuce, handing out salad samples.
Getting them hooked like a drug dealer. It's like, man, first gram's on us.
I'm like, this is free, but the bottles are over there.
For the radio listeners, there's a joke, you know, you have a good face for radio. This gentleman does not have a good face for radio. He has a good face for TV. So I'm sure the housewives at Whole Foods ate him up.
It was a successful launch.
Did you say that you wore your lacrosse outfit with no shirt on? You were saying
like a little belly shirt jersey. Yeah.
And they had somebody spraying him down. It looked like he's sweating. Like, oh god, I love the salad dressing. Stretching.
Here's my card. Yeah. My cell phone's on there.
Yeah, exactly. The other,
I named this company after my mother.
I was thinking that they either had a really cool display to sell the salad dressing, or they got the kid to go steal the salad dressing again, and then Whole Foods just had to pay for it. There's 55 cases gone. We don't know where they went.
Running Shorecraft. Yeah. I think their inventory might be more advanced than that.
The best was, I'm like, hey, how much dressing should we bring? And he was like, most salad dressings sell about 4 cases in a month, and so that's all we need. I'm like, okay, cool. So, you know, it took, I don't know, 3 or 4 days because we were still making it like we were making a single salad times 4 cases worth. And we sold that in 30 minutes.
Wow.
And so I go to the director of the East Coast at the time for produce. Shout out to Eric Brown up in Boston.
What up, Eric Brown?
Eric Brown.
And I'm like, hey, man, all that dressing's gone. He's like, oh, there's more in the back. I'm like, no, we sold all 4 cases. He's like, we just opened.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, these people really love it.
Go. Well, don't you know, but everything is gone.
And he's like, well, go get more. I'm like, I have to go make more. You told me this was for the month.
Yeah.
So I'll never forget. I called my mom, and she was, she still is a Pilates instructor. And I'm like, Mom. We crushed it. 4 cases gone. I need you to go make more now.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, I'm busy. I'm like, Mom, you don't understand.
When you agreed to be in business, this is a pact for life.
Right. So 45 days in, she's like, you work me too hard. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm like, all right, I'm going to have to recruit my wife and brother. But she still owns a piece of the company, and she's our official taste tester.
Nice.
She just doesn't do the heavy lifting anymore.
You're just not requiring your mother to like churn out bottle after bottle, like 48 hour work days.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that seems reasonable.
You know,
labor rights. You know, there's some ethical issues there.
I'm gonna take the fifth on that.
I mean, but you know, seriously though, good for you guys. Like that's unbelievable. 50 cases.
Yeah,
and that
55.
Yeah, that was 6 years ago. Wow. And then we just
producing it, you know, out of you were working the rib restaurant, the rib joint. You guys were doing after hours, because that's something that maybe some listeners don't realize. To get a product onto a shelf, like, the having a great product is not the challenge,
right?
It's amazing, and you guys are obviously starting out with like a great formula and a great recipe. But the challenge is, like, how do you manufacture that? How do you get that to a store, to a distributor? Mm-hmm. And a lot of times you rent space from a restaurant, from a commercial kitchen, from someone that is licensed and inspected, so that you don't have to go through the whole process of putting that up front.
Right. And so, you know, we would come in every night, 11 o'clock, when Adam's Ribs in Eastport closed, and I knew the owner, so he let me go in for free. We had to pay him with salad dressing because I had no money to give him.
Yeah.
He's like, well, how much are you going to pay me? I'm like, is that a joke?
Yeah.
I'm starting a salad dressing company in a recession. Like, yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
But we would go in, bring all the lemons in, all the olive oil, all the bottles. We would hand make it in bowls, put funnels in the bottles, you know, and we would just crank out, call it 20 cases a night or something, mm-hmm. and go to bed at 3 o'clock, wake up at 6 for my day job.
You guys sell a day job, yep. at this point.
Do demos at lunch.
Wow.
Praying that I didn't see anybody that I worked with as I'm hustling salad dressing.
What were you doing?
Employee benefits.
Mm-hmm. Did you like your job
fun.
At the time?
Yeah. No. No. Didn't enjoy it. And that was one of the things, you know, I guess I was just searching for something. And
employee benefits was not it?
No.
It sounds so exciting and sexy when you say it,
yeah.
though.
Yeah, it's not. It's not sexy. And I just, everything kind of came to a point where I didn't want to do that anymore. My neighbor stole the salad dressing. I was like, you know what? This kind of makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And I just went for it. I didn't ask anybody's opinion. And I think a lot of times, you go and you try and find mentors that have been really successful in business, and they've been beaten down for so long,
mm-hmm.
that when you go to them and you have a crazy idea, like starting a perishable salad dressing and marinade company in the height of the recession, that's insane to them. That's like, that's the worst idea I've ever heard in my life.
This generation's going to shit. They're all stupid.
And, you know, I was like, we just did it. Mm. And then we had this.
Well, that's because you didn't know what a HACCP plan it was.
Exactly.
If you did, maybe you would have stepped back and reconsidered. That's the beauty of just not knowing and being passionate and having something you believe in.
Right.
And going for it.
See, this story, this is the thing that makes my mind go crazy, is this story is so inspirational and beautiful, and it's a success story. It's coming from nothing. But then there's the, you know, in an alternate universe, you know, we're having this conversation. You're like, oh, yeah. I remember, you know, 2009, I fucking spent a year of my life on this salad dressing, and it was the stupidest idea. It almost ruined my life. I'm still paying off my credit card, you know?
Right.
Like, it's so good that, like, you know, because everybody thinks, you know what I compare it to is, like, you know, okay, like a million people go and buy a lottery ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them knows they're going to win. And then the person that wins says, I knew I was going to win, you know, but then the other 999,000
also
thought just like that one person. So it's just like, you know, it's so nice to hear somebody that knew that they had a winning idea and then they won. But
it's so sad
that the other people didn't win.
It wasn't easy. I mean, there's every day things pop up that are just testing you to see if you actually want to do it. You want to move forward with it.
Uh-huh.
And we just wouldn't take no for an answer.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, the stores aren't ordering. If we do demos in the store, then they have to order because we have a demo scheduled.
Yeah.
So then it was like, let's go hire a demo person for every store in the entire region.
Yeah. Awesome.
And that was really difficult to manage.
Absolutely.
Everything built off of that. And so then we ended up figuring out our own model and our own kind of distribution model to get it into all of these other stores and we wanted to break out of just being a local salad dressing company. We wanted to see if the dressing was good in all different regions and everything else. And it turned out that it was.
Well, it just so happened it was successful.
It is delicious.
Yes. What, how many stores are you in right now?
We, by the end of the year, we'll be in like 6,000 stores.
And in every Whole Foods?
Yep. So we're, we're about to launch 21 different SKUs in Whole Foods, in every Whole Foods in North America, which include all of our fresh condiments, which we're really, really excited about. So we make a fresh ketchup, a fresh barbecue, a fresh teriyaki, fresh buffalo, fresh mayonnaise, and we're launching it in Whole Foods starting August 1st. Wow. So that is, it's unbelievable, and it's one of those things where you kind of sit back and you're like, I can't believe that. That's amazing.
Are you going to have to get 6,000 people to do demos that day?
Yeah. Well, we're trying to work a little smarter than harder, but you know,
get some drunk guy. Be like, hey, can you demo my salad dressing? We're low staff today.
Right. Well, I mean, it's a fight in the streets. You know, you got to get out there and you got to hustle it and you got to tell people your story, because the traditional marketing and advertising route for us, mm-hmm. for what we're doing, doesn't really translate. It's really kind of a word of mouth thing. And it's, you know, you telling your friend that you just had the best dressing ever, because traditionally dressings and condiments they're not sexy. They're not cool. No one gives a shit.
Yeah.
But then it's, you know, now we have people taking pictures of our dressings and condiments and everything sitting on tables, and they're bringing them to dinner parties instead of wine.
They're branding it for you.
Yeah, they're like, yo, this is the new, you know, we have a coconut milk based ranch that's really, really
amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. So that just launched, and that's been going really well. So, you know, it's just kind of pushing it and seeing what works and seeing what doesn't.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of times where everything that came before you, you know, there's Annie's, there's Newman's Own, there's all these like already natural products, but if you are to follow their model, you're kind of limiting yourself into what you can and can't do, and then there's some advantage into being the newcomers and being the naive people and just saying like, we just want to do it our way. We see what you're doing, but we're going to be really, really stubborn, which I know that that's kind of a thing that you guys have held on to in a lot of ways. Let's go to a quick sponsor break, and then we'll be back with Greg Vetter, talk more about sourcing and stuff.
I know I like this, what they say. following program was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit edwardsvaham.com.
God, welcome back to the main course without Patrick Martins. I am still Alexis McLaughlin here with Philip Gilmore.
I'm still Philip Gilmore.
Greg Vetter with us. Liz Smith in the studio. I always forget to say thank you so much to Liz for engineering all of our shows. Jack Inslee, who I, after like hearing that commercial for like the second or third week in a row, I want to read, like I want him to come out to restaurants with me and just read me the menu. Creamy fat from this Berkshire pork.
I'm pretty sure it's pronounced Inslee.
Inslee.
What do that, I'm just kidding. Say? You said
you're doing the Patrick Martin thing where it's actually pate.
Edwards.
Oh, yeah. And thank you to our sponsor.
Edwards.
Edwards. What does Edwards mean to you?
Well, do you know I opened up Moku Moku, which is a yakitori restaurant. We're doing, like, skewers, and we're wrapping some Gulf shrimp and some Suriano ham. Yum. Grilling it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Alexis just got me this beautiful black with gold lettering Edwards hat. And
Well, I got it for you for a reason. Well, one, because we were just hanging out with the Edwards team, like, last weekend, and they're always awesome and amazing fun time.
Yeah.
Keith Roberts, Sam Edwards, and Sammy Edwards, the fourth, the youngest son. Well, the only son.
Yeah.
But, so Phil lost his hat, so I had to get him a replacement because it was his favorite hat.
Yeah, well, I had the tan one with the brown lettering, and there's some people that have this vintage mobile, vintage clothing shop that it's in, like, you know, trailer, and you can just go in, everything's $10. And so I saw this awesome hat. It's like this this like white hat, and it was embroidered. It had an eagle, and it said Alaska. So I'm like, I'm going to borrow this. And I left my Edwards hat hanging where this cool Alaska hat is. And I was like, I'll come back in a couple hours, and I'll switch it back out. And he's like, what if somebody buys it? I'm like, nobody's going to buy it. 5 minutes later, some old guy is like, I'm from Surrey, Virginia, and he bought the hat. So then I got stuck with this awesome Alaska hat, but then I lost my favorite Edwards hat. So Alexis got me this beautiful black and gold.
Yeah, you leveled up. That's trimmed out in gold. Yeah, I mean, that's what's going on.
It's beautiful.
Some VIP shit.
That is very VIP.
Yeah.
Have you had Edwards ham before? They're not too far from you. They're in Surrey, Virginia.
I have not.
We will feed you Edwards ham after the show.
That'll be huge for
Try me. Our new ham dressing. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the coconut ranch dressing. I forget what it is, but we were talking. There's some ingredient in there that's like specifically hard to find, because that's kind of one of the tenets. I mean, like, it's a
the
big
ingredient
part of
is
what
magic.
You guys do is that, like, you know, it's all natural, like organic, non-GMO, as much as, you know, is feasible,
right.
Which is much more than other companies.
Yeah, I mean, for coconut milk, it's really hard to find no gums in it, like guar gum and xanthan gum and things like that. And so none of our sauces or condiments or dressings or anything have any gums in it.
What are the gums? Gums are, they are preservatives?
Yeah.
Or well, emulsifiers or
yeah.
both?
Both.
It's more just to kind of make water. For example, somebody sent us something specific for salad dressing, and my brother Matt walked into my office and he had this spoon upside down with like this putty hanging off of it. I'm like, what the hell is that? He goes, it's water.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it's water? What did you do? He's like, somebody sent me this like salad thickening agent, and so I put it in water to see what would happen, and this is it. And I'm just thinking to myself, how are we supposed to digest something like that?
Yeah, right.
And so the hardest thing for us to find with the coconut milk ranch and Caesar was finding a coconut milk supplier that didn't put any gums or citric acid or anything like that. So there was only, we went on essentially a global search for this thing and found one supplier that we could that could give it to us. And so we are buying as much as they will sell us.
Where is it from?
That's proprietary information. Hey, what's the name?
From Jacksonville.
It's a Tallahassee coconut milk.
sorry. So mean. There are other just Tallahassee kidding. People here today.
Probably one.
Yeah, it's Kristen. Yeah. It's just the one. I mean, when will other coconut milk suppliers acquiesce to what you guys want and hop on the train? Because, like, at some point, the scale of your company has grown so much. I don't want to say so quickly, because it's been 6 years, and yeah. It seems like the development has been, you know, sustainable, you know, behind, like, on the business side. But your company has grown so quickly that it seems like you guys probably could make demands of producers and start making some larger impacts in the food production world just by meeting.
Yeah, we try. It's one of those things where you just got to have the relationship and you got to have the volume. And I think for us, we are 6 years old, but we're only 6 years old. And so when you're talking to, you know, a lemon farm or something in Florida that's been there for 100 years, yeah. And you're 6 years old and just started buying from them, you know, 4 years ago, and then you're telling them to change their.
That's kind of the foundation of what Heritage Food does, though, is that they, if I'm not mistaken, you can chime in, but you know, they tell farmers, if here's a list of stipulations, if you follow these guidelines, we will buy all of your pork, but you have to do these things.
Right. I think,
and then there's a guarantee, there's a, you know, a contract where the Heritage is going to buy all of the pork, you know. So
look, I mean, like for our company, we don't have a ton of money to throw around, and our instinct, like, first, like, what we do, and this is just how we approach things and how we've, you know, seen that they've worked out well, is that we'll start working with someone immediately and just say, like, you know, we're gonna make a commitment, we're gonna buy from you, we're gonna provide some upfront security and just, like, prove to you that we're committed. And then it's always on a farmer to farmer basis. It's not so strict because everyone has their own practices and principles, and even location affects, you know, the different things that you're going to do for your farm. But it's just having this idea of, you know, saying, like, hey, you know, these are, connecting the farmers to their markets. Like, you know, this is what chefs want. And here's how you can make, you know, 10 cents more pound, 20 cents more pound. And, you know, grow things for yourself and really find, like, that profitable region. And, you know, and for us, it's like, you know, doing the right thing. But it is a working relationship. And they have to trust you as much as, you know, you're going to trust them to do the right thing.
But aside from
it takes time.
But aside from the money, too, it's like if you tell a farmer, you have to do these things and I'll buy your product, and they're things that are, like, responsible, and then they're seeing from start to finish that they're doing things more responsibly, that it's not just about money, but being part of something that's, like, you know, not killing the world is kind of special.
It's kind of special.
Yeah.
For farmers raising livestock, they're pushed into the commercial, you know, market because they have no choice, because there's not a sustainable, like, there's not sustaining income for them. There's not kind of this guaranteed payout that if you spend more up front that you're going to receive that payout in the end. So we just say, like, look, we're going to pay you a flat fee. Like, this is what you're going to get from us, and we're going to commit to buying a, you know, 100% of what you're producing. So there's our commitment, and now you just need to rise up and just do the things that we need to be the company that we believe in.
That sounds like a lot of lemonade.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's the production side of things is, like, such a challenge. Yeah. I've really, like, surprised and amazed that you guys have just managed to scale and still have, you know, really amazing, you know, production standards.
Yeah, I mean, my mom gave me one piece of advice from a business perspective, and she is not a business person.
So you ignored it?
I listened. And she goes, Greg, do you remember Schlitz beer? And I'm like, no. She goes, it was the beer that my friends and I, we all drank it. And then they cheapened up their ingredients,
and everybody stopped buying it. Mm-hmm. And now no one drinks Schlitz beer.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Mm.
I said, that's great advice.
Yeah.
And so along this journey, you bring in these manufacturing specialists and the, you know, production people, and you look at co-packers and you try and find an efficient and scalable way to have a partner that you can come out with a product and scale it and not have to liquidate your 401ks and sign over every personal guarantee you have and have your dad sign over his house, but they don't exist. And so we had to do that. And we started, I guess, 3.5 years ago or 4 years ago, we started a 36,000 square foot manufacturing facility without demand, really. We were in one region of Whole Foods. But we knew if we wanted to be better, and that's really what it was. It wasn't about being bigger, but if we wanted to be better than everybody else,
all in,
we had to go all in. Mm-hmm. And I remember the conversation with my dad, and I sat him down on a Saturday and I said, hey, I'm going to need you to sign over your house and essentially everything that you own.
Mm-hmm.
And he just looks at me, he goes, okay. And I'm like, what?
you were a good boy. You ate all your salad growing up, so I'm going to do this for you.
Yeah. It's more like you were a terror
and
you're doing
but
something
it,
now.
Right, but it was crazy. And then we started this facility, and then we scaled up our own manufacturing and everything else like that. And, you know, the business came from it because we had the flexibility and the control of our own manufacturing and our sourcing and our standards.
And you remained in control.
Right. And that's a big thing. I mean, you know, we're dealing with olive oil, for example, had one of the worst olive oil crops ever. Mm-hmm. And then lemons had, you know, a bad harvest. And then, you know, right now eggs are, you know, they're killing 40 million chickens right now. So there's going to be an egg scarcity coming up. And so you have to deal with that. Like, that's my problem. Like, that's not anybody else's problem. They're like, hey, I want your mayonnaise, okay? And I want, you know, lemon garlic dressing, and you better make sure you give it to me.
So at Whole Foods, it has your salad dressing, and underneath the price is market price.
Like a crab cake.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sorry. It's actually $18 today, but it was
I thought it was $5.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I don't
think we've even said the name of your company
yesterday.
Yet.
No.
Have we at the beginning?
Tessie Mays, yeah, all natural.
We have to brand it. We have to keep on saying it.
Yeah, I know. We got to get better at that.
I'll just shout out the name, everybody involved, everyone's names.
Well, you're
and my birthday. I'm a Gemini. Yeah.
Birthstone?
I believe it's an emerald.
Ooh, wow. Beautiful.
I learned that trick working the door at a bar.
Oh.
Yeah.
You know, it's when someone goes up with a fake ID. Oh. It's like, well, what's your birth sign and your birth zone? I have no idea. But you ask someone and then they get sufficiently flustered. I don't have to remember it. It's perfect.
I remember I wanted it to be, you know, you're like, what's the best stone? A diamond. And it's like, yours is an emerald. And I'm like, oh, all right. Well,
I love emeralds.
Yeah, they're beautiful. But at the time, it's like,
interesting.
Yeah.
Mine's garnet.
I'm garnet too.
January?
Yeah.
Yeah.
May 31st.
Though. Yeah. Garnet's like the
that's
the,
a great day.
The shit ruby. Garnet's like the shitty ruby.
It is the shitty ruby.
Yeah. Then I didn't even get ruby. I garnet.
hey, we're out of gems.
Yeah, we only have 11. Garnet.
I would have been sufficient. Pearl is one of them.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
I could be lying.
No, it's not. It's not a gem.
Opal is one of
Opal
them.
Opal is.
These are precious.
Precious stones.
Precious.
Right?
No, they're, I think
they're just precious.
I think garnet is semi-precious. Actually, literally.
Oh, it might be semi-precious, but I mean, they're, you know.
No, because isn't diamond one of them?
They're fancy crystals.
Diamond is one of the months?
April.
Yeah.
And April. I know that's because it's my brother, Brian's.
Nice.
He's like, oh, yeah, I got the diamond.
Brian's the middle. You're the oldest. Brian's the middle.
Brian,
Matt's the youngest.
Yep. Brian's birthday is April 1st, mm-hmm. April Fool's Day.
Mm-hmm.
And he heads up all of our business development. And Matt, his birthday is March 31st,
mm-hmm.
which is funny. If you go back 9 months, that's my dad's birthday.
Oh, yeah. That's too funny.
And he runs all of our operations, so supply chain, manufacturing, all that good stuff. Awesome. And so all of this was just baptism by fire. Wow. You know, Matt took over operations because he played with Legos as a kid, so we thought that was a qualifying nice. event. Hey, so you played with Legos, right? He's like, yeah, I did. I'm like,
here's a 36,000 square foot yeah. factory.
Yeah. You're gonna need to figure this out really quickly, because Brian just sold dressings that we don't actually make to every Whole Foods in North America.
Why did Brian get the salesman piece?
If you ever meet him, you will know.
It's just, that's it.
Like, he walks into a meeting and it's closed. Yeah. Like, it's done. The deal is done. He has
a closer.
He has a mustache tattoo on his finger that closed every region of Whole Foods, because people will be talking. He's like,
And they're like, God, is that it? He got a tattoo to close it. He knew his audience on that one.
No, it was all coincidence. That was him living in Barcelona for 6 months and coming back with a finger tattoo. That was pretty crazy.
Do you ever see Glenn Ross?
Yeah.
Yeah, does he watch that? Like, you know, on his phone before he goes to the meeting? Always be closing.
He's the complete opposite of
oh,
that.
Oh, really?
Oh, he walks in, he's like, what's up? Yeah. This is my mom's dressing. The best story ever was we got a meeting with the NorCal region of Whole Foods, mm-hmm. and we needed this, right? So we're like, we have to close this. And so he flies out and he has the meeting and he calls me. He's like, it's closed. And I'm like, oh my God, thank you. This is amazing. We're going to make it. Like, they're not going to foreclose on my home. And he's like, but I just got to stay out here for like 2 weeks, because we got to fill out all the paperwork and stuff. And then I have a couple more meetings because, you know, we're crushing it out here. And I'm like, oh, this is great. Excellent, Brian. I'll see you whenever I see you. So 3 days later, he calls me, goes, we're actually in. And I'm like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, they said no the first time. So I just kept showing up to their office and was like, yo, my dad's house is on the line, and you're going to bring this dressing.
Yeah.
And so, you guys actually love this. You just don't know
it. Yeah, it's like, you don't K-N-O-W.
Yeah.
And so that was pretty funny.
Wow.
I was like, thank you for not telling me that we didn't get in. Right. Hey, I appreciate it. We got in.
That's...
He kept on bringing, like, weed brownies, being like, I baked these for you. Why don't you eat one, and then we'll talk about that signing.
Exactly.
So if anyone wants to give Tessie Mays a shot, they can find you guys all across, like, nationwide, yeah, Whole Foods,
online,
Kroger's.
Online market?
Yes, TessieMays.com.
Ooh.
But we're in Whole Foods, we're in Safeway, we're in Kroger, we're in Wegmans, we're in... You know, Earth Fair, we're in Fresh Market, we're in Roundy's, Mariano's in the Midwest, we're in...
Fairway?
We're not in Fairway.
That's where you gotta be.
Yeah.
Do you know Fairway?
While you're in New York, we'll get you in Fairway.
Yeah. You know Fairway?
Maybe this radio broadcast will lock that in.
Wait, aren't they one of the sponsors?
Yeah, they sponsor the radio, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
It was so much a pleasure to have you in studio. Thank you so much for taking the trip to join us in beautiful and sunny Bushwick, Brooklyn. Yes.
We're actually going to go over to Momo. We're going to try a shiso sesame dressing.
Oh,
this is a historical record that Tessie Mays ever.
No, be the next famous flavor.
No, because now there's a historical record that I can sue you if you ever.
Exactly, I love it.
Awesome. Well, it's very nice to meet you. Then, yeah, happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.